Sup, you beautiful bastards. Hope you had a fantastic Monday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. The first thing we're going to talk about today is vaping and e-cigarettes. So over the last few months, health officials say they've been seeing a string of lung-related illnesses. Back in April, health departments in Illinois and Wisconsin followed 53 patients who had vaped, and a third of those people reportedly ended up on respirators. Last month, you had the Washington Post report that within days, one man had gone from being a 20-year-old hiking enthusiast to being kept alive by two machines forcing air into and out of his lungs and oxygenating his blood outside of his body. Around the same time, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was reportedly investigating almost 200 cases, and all of that led up to the first reported death from a vaping-related illness, which happened a few weeks ago in Illinois, and then this past Wednesday, health officials released a statement saying that they were investigating the death of another person in Oregon. Then, this past Thursday, the New York Department of Health said that it was reporting 34 cases of severe pulmonary illnesses. And those cases are notable because investigators believe that they may be specifically linked to cannabis vaping products, which all the people in the cases said that they use. Though, of note, some said that they had used other types of vaping products as well, and here's the thing. A lot of people might naturally assume that it's the cannabis that's causing these illnesses, but health officials actually believe that it is another ingredient typically packed in cannabis vape products, specifically oil derived from vitamin E, which you can find that oil in things like almonds and canola oil, which, before you get worried, it is safe to eat. It is also safe to use on the skin and creams, but the issue here is that health officials worry that breathing it in may be harmful, right? And so what you have is an oil, it gets heated up, it turns into a vapor, you breathe it in, and it's believed that because it's an oil, it's then going to return to a liquid state in your lungs once it cools down, which then coats them with the oil. And as it turns out, your lungs are pretty horrible at dealing with anything that isn't a gas. You then reportedly have immune cells recognizing this oil as foreign, trying to get rid of it. That then, in turn, could cause your lungs to inflame. That could hurt your ability to breathe. And a big note regarding this story, the New York State Department of Health says it believes some of the products in the investigation may be counterfeits of the state's medically approved marijuana, although the person who died in Oregon appears to have purchased the product legally. So officials right now aren't sure if this is a problem with legal vaping products, with off-the-street vaping products, maybe both. I mean, hell, you had one doctor telling CBS News, when you think about it, these e-cigarette devices are really like chemistry sets. You put in this liquid, you lick it, you heat it up, there's some kind of chemical reaction, you're creating all these different chemicals, you're not entirely sure what these chemicals are, but we are sure of one thing, you are sucking a lot of them. All of this is just a working theory on what is causing these illnesses, and the FDA is now testing over 100 samples. This to see if there may be other contributing substances, such as synthetic cannabinoids, pesticides, or opioids. They're also looking at THC and nicotine, and in a statement they said, no one substance, including vitamin E acetate, has been identified in all of the samples. The CDC also echoing that warning with all vape products, but unfortunately the problems have only continued as we saw three more reports of death, these occurring in Indiana, California, and Minnesota. As of right now, we do not know how old the person from Indiana was, but the other two were 55 and 65, and of those, we only know that one of them had been using a cannabis vaping product, and that person also had a history of lung disease. Right, so that could mean trying to make a sort of relationship between the two there murky. But also, the number of cases being investigated has skyrocketed. Officials have now logged 450 cases across 33 states suspected to be from vaping-related illnesses. Also, regarding this story and space, just this morning we saw the FDA issue a warning to Juul for, quote, engaging in labeling, advertising, and or other activities directed to consumers, in which Juul explicitly and or implicitly has represented that Juul products are free of a substance, have a reduced level of or exposure to a substance, and or that Juul products present a lower risk of tobacco-related disease or are less harmful than one or more other commercially marketed tobacco products. We even saw First Lady Melania Trump tweet, I am deeply concerned about the growing epidemic of e-cigarette use in our children. We need to do all we can to protect the public from tobacco-related disease and death and prevent e-cigarettes from becoming an on-ramp to nicotine addiction for a generation of youth. And as far as my reaction to this story, I'll start one with the respiratory diseases. Obviously, I think it is incredibly important to definitively understand why something is happening when we're talking about the public health. But also, too, I think in the meantime, it's important to handle things in a certain way as to not accidentally make the situation worse. Regarding that first report from Illinois and Wisconsin, Reason.com points out 83% admitted using black market cannabis products, as well as pointing out that e-cigarettes have been in wide use for years while these cases have cropped up only recently. And so they note it therefore seems likely that the agents responsible for the symptoms are relatively new. And whether it be vapes in general or Juuls, I think we need to be careful in what kind of crackdown we see. Because obviously, we don't want more kids Juuling. We don't want more kids putting nicotine in their system, getting addicted. But you know, to mention something that David Hammond, a University of Waterloo professor whose research on chronic disease has recently focused on vaping, said, we can't wish them away in reference to e-cigarettes, and adding to the extent that we have many, many Canadians using these products, I don't think pushing those folks outside the legal market makes sense. Especially, even though it is not definitively known, there seems to be a lean towards the idea that it's the black market products that may be causing this. Especially because regarding legal vaping products, Hammond says, they're almost certainly likely to be harmful
harmful.
But much less harmful than smoking. And adding, we have to find a way of getting these in the hands of adult smokers who can't quit other ways, but protect kids and change the perceptions of these things as a fun, modern, sleek way of taking your drugs. And the final place that we'll kind of end on this story, one, please in no way take this as me saying, yes, continue to juul and vape, right? This is not me promoting that. But more of a, we need to make sure that we handle this in the best possible way. And I mean that for, we kind of bounce back and forth, but both of the situations of cannabis vapes as well as juuls, because you don't want to force more people into the black market or accidentally push more people to smoking cigarettes, because as the CDC points out, cigarette smoking is responsible for more than 480,000 deaths per year just in the United States. Yeah, that's where that story ends today. You got the story, a little of my thoughts on it, but of course, I want to pass the question off to you here. And of course, like with everything, I'd love to know everyone's thoughts. But also, especially, what are your thoughts on this if you're someone who vapes or you juul? I'm really interested in what you have to say on this one. Then, today and over the weekend, there were a number of stories involving and or around or focused on President Donald Trump. And seemingly, what has become kind of standard, the story that has garnered the most attention going into the week is also kind of the least significant story, right? Like, for example, this morning when you woke up, if you went to Twitter, most every trending topic was about President Trump and Chrissy Teigen. Because last night, MSNBC aired a special program hosted by Lester Holt called Justice for All. And that program focused on criminal justice reform in America. Part of that program involved a town hall and an interview with musician John Legend to discuss his campaign called Free America. And for those who don't know, John Legend is Chrissy Teigen's husband, which is seemingly a thing you do not need to know about, but matters because Trump ended up tweeting what seemed to be a reaction to this program, saying, "When all the people pushing so hard for criminal justice reform were unable to come even close to getting it done, they came to me as a group and asked for my help. I got it done with a group of senators and others who would never have gone for it. Obama couldn't come close. A man named Van Jones and many others were profusely grateful at that time. I signed it into law, no one else did, and Republicans deserve much credit. But now that it has passed, people that had virtually nothing to do with it are taking the praise. Guys like boring musician John Legend and his filthy-mouthed wife are talking now about how great it is. But I didn't see them around when we needed help getting it passed." Quote, anchor Lester Holt doesn't even bring up the subject of President Trump or the Republicans when talking about the importance or passage of criminal justice reform. They only talk about the minor players or people that had nothing to do with it. And the people that so desperately sought my help when everyone else had failed, all they talk about now is impeaching President Trump. Now, following this, in addition to the general reaction, we saw John Legend and Chrissy Teigen both respond. Legend saying, "Imagine being president of a whole country and spending your Sunday night hate-watching MSNBC, hoping somebody, anybody, will praise you. Melania, please praise this man. He needs you. Your country needs you, Melania." Teigen, on the other hand, went with a far more direct strategy, tweeting, "LOL, what a pussy-ass bitch. Tagged everyone but me. In honor, Mr. President." Then posting this photo, writing, "Luna, who's her daughter, remember the night before your first day of school when mommy was making your sign and the pussy-ass bitch president had his ninth meltdown of the day?" And adding, "The absolute best part of this tweet is I literally didn't speak in the special, nor was I mentioned. I'm cackling at the pointless addition of me because he cannot not be a bitch." Which is why this morning we saw the hashtag President Pussy-Ass Bitch, which we actually also saw circulate even harder after Teigen, Legend, and others jokingly said that they hoped that would not trend. But really, ultimately, that's where that story ends. There's just a lot of people kind of memeing and joking and arguing. But also, with me being the opportunist that I am, if you would like to join the Filthy Mouthed Wife Club, you can snag a limited pre-order shirt right now over at shopdefranco.com. And if you want to attach a political affiliation with it, fine. But I and the real people of America know that filthy mouthed wives, they have no problem crossing the aisle to say shut the fuck up to whoever they're speaking to. Sometimes even their own husbands. Lindsay. Also, this morning, there was another piece of Trump news and more people were made aware of because the president tweeted, "I know nothing about an Air Force plane landing at an airport, which I do not own and have nothing to do with, near Turnberry Resort, which I do own in Scotland, and filling up with fuel. With the crew staying overnight at Turnberry, they have good taste. In all caps, nothing to do with me." Now, as far as what is Trump talking about, where is this coming from? Back on Friday, Politico put out a report titled, "Air Force crew made an odd stop on a routine trip, Trump's Scottish resort." And adding, "Now the layover is part of a broader House inquiry into military spending at and around the Trump property." And according to that report, since April, the House Oversight Committee has been investigating why the crew on the C-17 military transport plane made the unusual stay, both en route to the Middle East and on the way back. Now, according to the New York Times, previously, an Air Force official defended lodging the crew at Turnberry because it offered the closest rooms available and that the rooms were discounted below an internal spending limit. But on Sunday, in a statement sent to Politico, the Air Force said that it is reviewing how it selects international overnight accommodation locations. Also today, regarding the airport that Donald Trump says that he does not own and has nothing to do with, You saw Natasha Bertrand, a national security correspondent for Politico, tweet a screenshot from November of 2014 with the headline, "The Trump Organization and Glasgow Prestwick Airport Announce Official Partnership," where it goes on to say, "Prestwick will serve as the main hub for not only Mr. Trump's private aviation operation, but in particular, it will service the Trump Turnberry Resort, which with Mr. Trump's investment of £250 million, will transform it into the finest resort in the world." And as far as why this situation, as Axios explains, Trump's tweet comes less than a week after House Democrats opened an inquiry on the use of tax dollars at Trump properties in the House Judiciary Committee plans to vote this week to formalize an impeachment inquiry. And so you have people pointing out that that relationship matters not only because of this one particular situation, but because it's not just one plane. According to Air Force statistics, military aircraft stops at this particular aircraft have gone up. According to reports, in 2015, Air Mobility Command aircraft stopped at Prestwick 95 times. So far this year, there have been 259 stops, 220 of them involving overnight stays. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. But then finally, we have this huge news regarding the now canceled peace talks between the United States and the Taliban. On Saturday, we saw President Trump announce on Twitter that he had canceled a secret meeting between U.S. officials and the Taliban, writing, "Unbeknownst to almost everyone, the major Taliban leaders and separately the president of Afghanistan were going to secretly meet with me at Camp David on Sunday. They were coming to the United States tonight. Unfortunately, in order to build false leverage, they admitted to an attack in Kabul that killed one of our great-great soldiers and 11 other people. I immediately canceled the meeting and called off peace negotiations. What kind of people would kill so many in order to seemingly strengthen their bargaining position? They didn't. They only made it worse. If they cannot agree to a ceasefire during these very important peace talks and would even kill 12 innocent people, then they probably don't have the power to negotiate a meaningful agreement anyway. How many more decades are they willing to fight?" And if the United States talking with the Taliban is news to you, how dare you for not watching our previous deep dive? And for some context here, under the agreement, which officials have been negotiating for almost a year, the United States would remove 5,400 of the remaining 14,000 American troops in Afghanistan within 135 days, with the broader goal being to gradually withdraw the entire U.S. military presence, which has been in the country for nearly 18 years since just after 9/11. And reportedly, in exchange for the United States withdrawing the troops, the Taliban would then stop enacting and supporting violence in the regions of Afghanistan where the U.S. military was based. And in fact, just last Monday, the United States envoy for Afghanistan told local media in the country that both sides had agreed to the deal in principle. But a lot of the people in the Afghan government, including the president of Afghanistan, were skeptical of both the peace deal and the meeting at Camp David. Afghan critics of the agreement argued that it did not include input from the Afghan government and did not really give them a seat at the table for negotiations. And following that, the Trump administration addressed this concern by arguing that its talks with the Taliban would pave the way for the Taliban to negotiate with the Afghan government. But still, others worry that that plan was problematic or just doomed from the get-go because the Taliban doesn't recognize the Afghan government and has refused to negotiate with them in the past. Those critical of the plan also argued that the deal only protected American troops because it did not require the Taliban to stop attacks on Afghan civilians or the Afghan military. And that is especially important because the Taliban now controls more territory in the country than it has at any time since the war started, and also because the Taliban has carried out and supported numerous deadly attacks over the last few months. And so you have Afghan officials worried that if the U.S. pulls out here, it would create a sort of security vacuum, leaving the Afghan military to fend for itself. And so prompting fears that the Taliban would not only launch more violent attacks, but also try to take over the government. Now also of note here is it wasn't just people in Afghanistan who opposed the negotiations. According to reports, multiple high-ranking officials, even including Vice President Mike Pence and National Security Advisor John Bolton, opposed the meeting. Bolton, among others, allegedly did not believe that the Taliban could be trusted and the deal would just collapse anyway. Also, other administration officials were reportedly worried about the optics of having an unprecedented meeting with a militant group on U.S. soil just days before the 18th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks. And so, after Trump put out that tweet, reportedly a leader from the Taliban told NBC News that they were caught off guard by the news, saying, "It not only shocked us, it made us realize the people we were talking with were not sincere in peace talks." And last night, they also released a statement saying, "Such a reaction towards a single attack just before the signing of an agreement displays lack of composure and experience. This, even as attacks by the U.S. and their domestic supporters prior martyred hundreds of Afghans and destroyed their assets. We called for dialogue 20 years earlier and maintain the same stance today and believe America shall return to this position also. Our previous 18-year resistance should have proven to America that we will accept nothing less than the complete end of occupation and allowing Afghans to decide their own fate." Now, as far as the president of Afghanistan, he has not responded specifically to Trump's tweets. However, yesterday his office released a statement saying, "The people in the government of Afghanistan pursue a dignified and sustainable peace and are committed to putting any effort into ensuring peace in the country. However, the government considers the Taliban's obstinacy to increase violence against Afghans as the main obstacle to the ongoing peace negotiations. We have consistently stressed that genuine peace is possible when the Taliban stop the killing of Afghans, embrace an inclusive ceasefire, and enter into direct negotiations with the Afghan government." That's the situation, and as far as what happens next here, I mean, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, when speaking to Fox News, he was asked if Afghan talks were dead, and he said for the time being they are, but also reportedly telling CNN that the U.S. is still interested in striking a deal as long as the Taliban honors its commitments. And so right now, for the United States, it looks like there are three main options. One, try to come to the table with another deal. Two, withdraw the troops without concessions from the Taliban. Or three, just keep the troops in Afghanistan. And also, the timing here is notable. It's not just because of 9/11, but because for Afghanistan, they're set to have elections later this month on September 28th. And notably there, the Taliban does not want those elections to take place. And so you have officials in the United States and Afghanistan concerned that the Taliban attacks will ramp up. But ultimately, that is where we are right now. It is going to be interesting to see what happens with negotiations, unfortunately attacks. And of course, with this story especially, but really any story, I'd love to know your thoughts on it. One, regarding what has transpired, but also two, your thoughts in general about negotiating with the Taliban. Yeah, let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. And that's where I'm going to end today's show. And hey, if you like this video, be sure to hit us with a like. Also, if you're new here, be sure to hit that subscribe button. Definitely click that bell to turn on notifications. Also, if you're not 100% filled in, you still want more, you can watch the reunion podcast with Steve Zaragoza and I by clicking or tapping right there. Or maybe you just missed the last show, you can click or tap right there to watch that. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.